Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Bobby Eckert, 28 years of combination experience, second-generation firefighter, a captain on Squad 7 with the City of Camden Fire Department in New Jersey, published author, creator, and owner of Eckert Fire Tactics. Love him or don't, Bobby has a huge passion and love for the fire service, and we'll let you know that. There's a story behind every person. There's a reason why they are the way they are. Think about that before you judge someone. As an officer, Bobby believes that he is there to serve for his people and not the other way around, leading by example in everything that you do. With that, I present Mr. Bobby Eckert.
How you doing? My name is Bobby Eckert. I'm a fire captain in the Camden, New Jersey Fire Department. Been involved in the fire service since I was 14. So we just did the math, 28 years. My dad was a fireman. He was the fire chief, the career fire chief in a town I grew up in, Collingswood, New Jersey, which is directly next to the city of Camden, New Jersey. I kind of got my start that way. Hung around the firehouse, kind of grew up in the firehouse. Wasn't always something when I was in my adolescence that I thought I would pursue as a career. I really wanted to do some time in the military or travel and things like that. I was into, I was really into surfing as a kid, hockey, things like that. So I didn't know, what path I would take. But when they started the junior fire program, I kind of just showed up, brought some friends to get it going. And a lot of those guys are still in the fire service today. So it definitely had an impact on us. I was in Collingswood for a long time. They have a career staff. They actually expanded their career staff in like 2002 and took over the ambulance. And I was hired as like a firefighter, EMT, EMT firefighter type deal. Did that where my dad worked a different time than when my dad was there. Wasn't really my jam being there. I kind of always wanted to work for Camden. Just didn't think it was a possibility. Due to the residency requirement, I did move in there and live there, bought a house, lived with my best friend, had a great time. And I got hired there in April 2006 and was there till January 18th, 2011. They laid off 65 of us. I was one of the ones that got laid off. Everybody kind of, as people retired or left, they brought people back. So I was laid off about, first week, it was right after July 4th, I was brought back on the job. And I've been there ever since, been a captain since February 2nd of 2016. And still a captain now. And that's where I'm at, man.
Okay. All right. So besides your dad, is anybody else in the fire service in your family or is it just you two?
My 15-year-old son just joined junior fire explorers in Haddon Heights Barrington Fire Department, which is town right next to me.
Okay. And so with seeing your dad, and you said your dad was a former fire chief, did your dad, which I'm sure he did, but did he have some sort of influence on you into like how we should treat the fire service and what the fire service is?
Yes and no. He was really into showing me more like the practical application of firefighting. I watched from afar my dad be a leader, but I didn't realize what he was doing until I got much older, where I was able to resonate and click of what type of person he is. My dad's going to be 87, still with us and still with it. If I told the guys that work for my dad that my dad needed something, they would stop, but they would literally leave family vacations and go help him. So, he's a very, he's an amazing human being on so many levels, but leadership is a trait that he definitely has. And it seems to flow natural to him. And he has a really good way with people. He's always been that way. I'm sure every child in the world is a cross between both their parents. My eccentric behavior and attitude comes from my mother, and hopefully some other traits come from my father. But yeah, he just it was more of just watching him. And you know, kind of when I got into fire service, he was when I joined when I was 14, he was very hands off. And he got, you know, he got involved a little bit, came and did like our fire behavior stuff for us and did some stuff like that. But, you know, it was like, here you go, have at it. Hopefully I showed you enough. And if you have any questions, let me know. And I've kind of taken the same approach with my own son. I just drop him off and it's his journey.
Okay, I like that. But I'd imagine if he has any questions, you definitely want and encourage him to come to you and you'll
Oh,
answer
absolutely. He
whatever.
gets the benefits of coming and training with me a lot. So, you know, he's been in live fires, and I've taught him how to stoke fires, and well, I'm teaching him how to stoke fires. I haven't taught him. It's kind of an art. So, you know, he's on the entry level to that. So he's definitely interested. Whether he does it as a career or a hobby, I don't know. There's zero pressure. Zero pressure. You know, I didn't even. He came to me about it. I didn't come to him about it.
Okay. All right. Love it. Got a question for you. So, in your opinion only, whether you're a career volunteer, what is your definition of professionalism?
Well, I think professionalism, first off, it doesn't matter if you're a career volunteer. When somebody calls 911, they don't care who shows up, right? I think we need to remember that. I think we need to hold ourselves to a standard that somebody dialed 911 and depleted all their means necessary and are calling you to solve a problem. So I think I always try to treat people that I deal with in the street, you know, that call 911, residents, civilians, patrons, whoever, like they're my family. I know that's cliche and people say that, but like I try to treat them with respect because that's who I serve. So I think the definition of professionalism is how you treat the people. I don't think this isn't the Naval Academy where we need to be dressed right, dressed, all that stuff. I think the fire service is really interesting in so many ways. I hear some people like, oh, I can't wear a hooded sweatshirt at work. Well, I can't either, but to me it's kind of crazy because I would rather be comfortable than in something I'm uncomfortable. But I don't think anything like that has anything to do with professionalism. I think it's how we treat people when the 911 system is activated.
Love it. And I have to agree with you. I mean, to me, there's a time and a place where like we should wear class A's, you know, depending on the events, public appearances, whatever. But at the end of the day, I think if we were to poll the citizens, hey, if you had an incident and your firefighter arrived or your first responder arrived with their shirt untucked, would you look at them differently? Like it's one of those things we tend to do that to ourselves in a sense.
Sure. I mean, firefighters, we're our own worst enemy. We ruin every rule there possibly is. So I think it's common sense that if I'm leaving the building and I'm going to be in my work uniform, that I should have my shirt tucked in. I think like what you think is common sense might not be common sense to somebody else.
Definitely. Okay. All right. With that being said, I always like to ask the guests, can you tell us a little bit about Camden, New Jersey? I'm from the New York area, so I've heard of Camden, but as far as your stations, personnel, engines, trucks, I don't know anything about that.
Well, first off, New York sucks. All their sports teams. I mean, you follow your foot, you jock football that literally play in the state of New Jersey. It's wild.
Is. I'll give you that. I'll give you that. You're right.
So dumb. New York Giants, literally, their mailing address is New Jersey. So Camden is a mile across the river from Philadelphia. The Delaware River separates us. It's a port city. It was an economic boom in the you know turn of the you know, early 1900s, just like all the you know the port cities up along the East Coast. It's no different. And it, you know, it went to the economic downturn like everybody else. It's 9.9 square miles by land, 14 miles landlocked. It has a census population of about 80,000. I would add about 20,000 more transients to that. So I'd put it like 100,000, 105 that are there 24/7. It's the county seat. There's federal judges there. There's major medical facilities, Cooper Hospitals, medical school. So, you know, Monday through Friday, the daytime population is probably closer to, I don't know, 175. There's a lot going on there, and they're only building it up. There's a lot of great things happening in my city. They're really putting some money into actually building it up, so it's been really neat to see. We have right now, we've had a ton of retirements. We're a little over like 200 on paper for firefighters, well, full personnel. We have 6 engines, well, 5 engines and 1 squad engine, 3 ladders, a rescue, 2 battalion chiefs on duty at all times, and we fire administration has 3 deputy chiefs, a chief of department, and we got a fire marshal's office. And yeah, it's an urban environment that has faced economic decay, and the city's going through a bunch of changes. It's definitely different than when I started there. And I would venture to guess that by the time I retire, it'll look totally different. It's a very blue collar, hardworking city. Some really amazing people there. The food scene's unbelievable. If you are into any type of ethnic food, whether it's Spanish soul food barbecue, it's just there's so much so such good eats there. There's this Mexican place that it was on Guy Fieri. What's the guy?
Oh, Guy Fieri.
Yeah, he had a drive past. There's a line out there all the time.
Okay.
I'm not a big Mexican food guy, but it's good eats. It's a cool place. We do see consistent fire duty, which is nice. And it's been a great place to be a fireman. I have no regrets. I'm excited to see what the future of the fire department holds. Kind of on the back end of my career, so I can leave in 6 years if I want. Or stay another 10. So I, you know, that'll be a decision I make game time, probably depending on what my rank level is. And yeah, it's a cool place. A little bit of everything. All 5 types of building construction are there. And we mostly have, it's very mirrored to Philadelphia with the building construction. A lot of type three ordinary row houses. The sections, it's sectioned off. East Camden. Yes, I sent that video as a fire was in yesterday. East Camden, a lot of wood frames out there. There's some industrial area. It's just there's a lot going on there. It's a really cool place on the port. So,
Okay. And firefighter EMTs, you're not medics or anything. Or
no. I am an EMT.
okay.
However, we don't do any EMS other than CPR. So the EMS is hospital based, and they have embraced in the last 4 or 5 years this PIT Crew CPR, and they've had great results with it. So if they are engaged in PIT Crew CPR, they do request an engine company and we go. However, if we're there and a house fire comes in, we're allowed to leave.
Wow, so only cardiac responses, nothing else. No falls, life alert buttons, none of that.
No, we don't even we're not even we just see the ambulances wave to them.
All right. And you guys definitely see your fair share of fire duty for sure.
Yes, it's
Okay.
very consistent.
Okay. So if a first do box comes in Camden's area, what's your first alarm assignment?
It's going to be 3 engines, 2 ladders, a rescue, and a chief.
Okay. And then if upgraded, you get the remaining.
If it goes all hands, you're going to get a second chief.
Okay. And do you guys run mutual aid?
We do to. There's a city next to us, Gloucester City. We're on their first due box assignment for a ladder truck and I believe an engine. And then there's a small town called Woodland Barrow where we're actually taking over their fire protection. So we go there and that's it.
Okay. Okay. All right. With that being said, upon you said earlier that you've always wanted to be on Camden. So upon getting hired there, what was it like walking through those doors? What was it everything you thought it would be?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I knew a lot of guys that worked there, so it was definitely I don't want to say intimidating, but I was like, it was like, wow, like pinch me moment. Went to the academy, met lifelong friends, my best friends in the world. I can't put into words with it, what my recruit class, what we've been through of getting laid off. We're very tight knit our recruit class. It's cool to see. We're jumping into our 19th year. We have two battalion chiefs in that recruit class, probably 15, 16 captains out of 34 guys. So we've definitely paved the way, and set the tone. And now we're like the old guys at work. But walking into that, it wasn't intimidating, but it was like a wow factor. I, truth be told, almost quit the fire department the first year. It was very different than what I was used to coming from the suburbs into that urban environment. The fast pace, I could not just grasp. It took me a while to grasp, but it took me about 6 months and getting settled in. We rotated positions in our first year. So you did 4 months. You did 4 months in the engine, 4 months in the ladder, 4 months in the engine. So how they broke it up. So I did 4 months in the engine, 4 months in the ladder, 4 months in another engine. And when I got to that third spot and settled in, that's kind of where it kind of clicked for me. It was a tough transition for me the first year. Really, really was. It was so hard. And it was more of, I thought I knew something, and I learned quickly that I didn't know shit. Shit. And I had to adapt to people that were on their game. On their game. I mean, there was guys when I got on that were hired in, in the early mid-70s when they were burning multiple times a day. Like it was, we would get a fire or two a day, and the old guy would be like, "That's it? Like, that's all we got?" Like we used to get six a day, and you're like, "Wow, you can't imagine that." But that's just how, that's a turn of the times. But yeah, it was a tough first year for me. It was a lot of learning, a lot of humility. I had to have a lot of gut checking conversations with myself personally because I just didn't know if I made the right choice. I didn't know if like this was the career for me when I thought it was. And it took a lot of being around a lot of good people, and just the basic thing was kind of opening myself up to realizing like I don't know a goddamn thing and I need to relearn all this. And when I was able to have that humility conversation with myself, things started to really click for me.
Okay. All right. And with that being said, did you find yourself trying to emulate those guys that were just into it like you thought you were, but you were nowhere near their level?
No, it was more me trying to emulate my father.
Okay.
And I
Okay.
realized like I'm not my father. He sleeps next to my mom. I don't. So I'm not my father. We shared the same name, but I'm not
Right.
him. So I got to kind of take bits and pieces from him and create my own style. And I see a lot of generational firefighters ruin their careers because they try to be that person. You're not that person. You're yourself. I told my son that when I dropped him off the firehouse first time, like, you're not me. You're you. So forge your own path. And I wasn't doing that. And when I kind of realized like that's what I need to do, things changed for me.
Okay. And I love the fact that you said that. I mean, I don't have a sibling or anything in the fire service, but I'd imagine, like, especially if your either mother or father is in the fire service and they are very like well-known, reputable, that's got to be a lot of damn pressure on you for sure.
It definitely is. And when you're not living up to them or you don't have the same personality, my father and I's personalities couldn't be different. Couldn't be different, which is fine. But when we have the same name and you're not the same personality, people start judging you, and that's fine. I'm not a judgmental person. So because I've been judged so hard, well, I'm always judged. I give a shit less, but because you don't know me. However, it's you got to forge your own path. You got to do your own thing. You got to realize like this is your career. Like my father lived a career, retired, getting a pension check from it. Like he's done. So like this is my term. What am I doing now? Like how am I going to be? What is my legacy going to be in the fire service or my fire department or, however you look at it.
Right. Okay. All right. With that being said, at what point in your career did you decide to move on to the next step in rank, so to speak?
It was probably like 3 or 4 years in. I just saw that the my first 3 or 4 years, I got the opportunity to do a lot of firefighting things, a lot. And we are a we have minimum staffing in our contract, so we hire overtime. We are an overtime heavy fire department. Well, it's straight time, but so if you work the overtime, you're going to work in an engine. You're going to work in a truck. You're going to work maybe in the rescue company. And you're going to do things on a daily basis. And when overtime's rocking and you're there, if you're there and there's fires, you're there, right? So, my first few years on, I had the opportunity to do a lot of firefighting things. And it was challenging. And when you started meeting the challenges and understanding how to do them, and next time you were in that situation, you performed better than the last time, and then it keeps going and going. You kind of want that next challenge. And I got together with a bunch of guys on my job. We formed a study group and hit it hard and crushed the exam. And I got what I asked for.
Okay.
And at 9 years old when I was promoted, I was 33 years old.
And what are your steps? Like, you go from firefighter to driver, firefighter to lieutenant. Are you allowed to skip rank or?
My fire department and most fire departments in New Jersey, it's firefighter, we call them private. So private, captain, battalion chief, deputy chief, chief of department.
Okay. All right. So there really are no so-called engineer type roles, driver roles. No.
No, we don't have that in our department. Everybody drives. Well, not everybody, but it's a rotating thing.
Rotating thing.
Like when I was assigned to engines, we all shared a month driving.
Okay.
You drive this month, I drive next month, that type of thing.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. All right. In your opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you? It's a buzzword, but I like to ask all the guests.
Oh, I think it's a word that is misused. I think it's a word that's misunderstood. I think being aggressive is having a mindset to forward think the problem ahead of you. So that being said, meaning like the best fireground officers, commanders, and firefighters I've ever worked with have been aggressively 4 or 5 steps of the fire ahead of the fire. I see all these young kids on the internet or wherever else, and in my job, they all want to run inside the burning building. They all want to get in there. They all want to melt their fucking helmet. They all want to do all that shit. And that will come in time, trust me. However, you're totally missing the big picture going in the building. So I think an aggressive mindset is putting you in a position where you know the movement, you know where you need to go, and you are able to anticipate fire travel, fire spread, where it's going to be, maybe where people are, things like that. I think an aggressive mindset puts you in an offensive position of operation where you can overcome the vast amount of obstacles very fast. You're moving towards your objective. The objective is the fire, right? The building's the obstacle. So you're overcome the obstacle to get to the fire, which is the objective, and you're in a mindset where you're moving. You're always moving. I think that's how I would define aggressive. I think the people that are not aggressive are the people that aren't moving. They're not going to where they need to be. And there's a way to move with a purpose. There's a way to move smart. There's a way not to move smart. I mean, I see people sprinting up the street. Brother, if I sprint up the street, I guarantee I'm rolling my ankle in a pothole or something. Like, I'm the most accident prone person in the world. So I don't think it's getting in there to the belly of the beast and laying under the fire like that. That's not aggressive to me. It's more of a mindset of moving towards the objective, overcoming obstacles through the objective, and anticipating where it's going to be next and traveling or whatever your job is going to be.
Okay. All right. And with you having so many years in the fire service, have you seen when you first started, like times where when your dad was fire chief and things like that, have you seen a progression with the fire department and the tactics, or have things kind of stayed the same or gotten worse? Your opinion only.
I think it's gotten worse. I think it. We live in a culture. I can't believe that the fire department can make a tactical misjudgment over the word safety. Okay, burn down somebody's house, and the homeowners come and bring a cookie tray to the firehouse the next day and say thank you for your service. That didn't happen when I was a kid. You got in there and put the fire out. Balloon frames, for example, we have a ton of them up here. It seems to me that we gave up on teaching balloon frames. We're not teaching properly. Think of the Firefighter One program in the state of New Jersey. You don't even have to extinguish a fire to be a firefighter. It's not a JPR. So I think the academy level training, I'm not talking about the instructors, talking about the curriculum, has fallen off the end. We're worried about everything else but house fires. So I think if you put the word firefighting last in your organizational table of how you handle things, then you can't be pissed off when there's a blunder on the fire ground. Every single solitary piece of fire apparatus in the United States of America, every single solitary one, if you look out the window when you're inside of it, the word fire is on it. Whether it's fire department, fire company, fire patrol, fire brigade, whatever, it's on it, right? So if the word fire is on the apparatus, why wouldn't we make fire the priority? Back in the day, they made fire the priority. They made fire the priority. When I came in the fire service, fire was the priority. Now it's hazmat on scene, blah, 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 blah. I mean, if you use an ERG guidebook ever, God bless you. I never have. I never needed to, you know, and maybe I'm lucky, maybe I'm not, but I'm just saying, like, my children could figure out an ERG guidebook. I don't need to spend 3 weekends on it in firefighter one, you know, and then an hour on building instruction and 45 minutes on fire behavior. And then we teach a reliance on technology. Isn't it amazing that there was more fires 30 years ago and they put these fires out better than we do now? And obviously, fires are definitely hotter with synthetics and stuff like that. I bite on that, but they didn't have thermal imaging cameras. You know, they learned how to read smoke. They learned how to fire behavior. They learned how to find fire the old-fashioned way. So I think firefighting was just differently better. And I think the safety culture got way too deep, way too deep, like way too deep. And I think a lot of the safety culture was perpetuated by people who have never been inside a burning building or are fearful of being inside a burning building.
That's facts. Okay. All right. I mean, everything you said makes sense, 100%, to me at least. With that being said, upon becoming an officer for your organization, and I'm sure through your career, you've learned the good and bad from both good officers, bad officers, but what kind of officer did you want to be, and what does leadership mean to you?
Good questions. The officer I wanted to be, and I hope that I am, is that when I am not at work on it, whether I call out sick or I'm on a vacation day, and my crew is working and somebody else is working in my spot, and there is a working fire, and they call me and tell me my guys did a great job, that's the kind of officer I want to be. You train your people to function without you. They don't need you. They do not need you. If you're a parent, you don't want your kid to live in your basement till they're 43 years old, right? You train them to function in the world without you. And that's how you have to take the aspect of, you know, being a company officer, especially professionally. Leadership to me is number one, always being in the forefront, always leading from the front, always. Always, you know, you got to be able to take the good and the bad, and you got to be able to sacrifice for your people always, whether that's taking a hit for them, whether that's covering for them, whether whatever. You should be the most, you should cause the least amount of drama in your crew. You should, people should know that they can depend on you. When I got promoted, we went to the bar before the ceremony. Great idea, right? No, bad idea. And when we got our badge pins on me, and my father said to me, "That's not yours." And I'm thinking, like, "Oh shit, I grabbed the wrong badge." Like that's what I was my thought in my mind. That's not what he meant. He meant that's theirs. And to unpack that statement is, my people don't work for me. I work for them. I work for my guys. I do. Whatever I can do to make their life better and make sure they are safer, and I hate to use the word safety, but make sure, you know, that they get home to their families, you know, to show them something that can make them better. And to me, you're the gatekeeper, if you're the company officer, of the fire department's future, of this wheel that turns, right? Like when I leave the fire department, the same interior fire attack tactics that we employ at work, I hope that I see that when I'm retired. You know, when we go to, there's every Friday, the bunch of retired guys get together at one bar and you can pop in there at lunchtime. I make it maybe once a month. And these guys are proud of us that we've carried on the tradition of what they did. And I would hope that we do the same. So it's, you're setting the right culture, you're setting the right tone, you're taking care of your people. And I'm a hands-off boss. I am. I'm not up anybody's ass. We're grown men, or ladies. If you got a problem, come to me. If I see you're off, I'm going to come to you. Hopefully, we can learn something together, or I can teach you what I know. If you're uncomfortable about something, come to me and we can go over it. But I can train all I want, and I own a fire training company. But I can say this, the best training ever is on the job experience. So the more I can show you on the job, the better you're going to be, and better to pass it on in the future.
Now, one of the things that you mentioned, which I think sometimes whenever an individual, to me, it all depends on why they want to get promoted. And I've seen a good amount of time it's for the wrong reasons. But you mentioned, like you are there for your men. Like they don't work for you, you work for them. With that being said, in your opinion only, why do you think certain organizations allow individuals who have been subpar, meaning they've been mediocre their entire career, and they go up for captain, and for some reason that's like, oh, they're gonna change and be who we want them to be, but they still promote these individuals?
I can't speak for other organizations because I don't know many promotional processes outside of the people that I know that work in different fire departments. We're a state civil service program. So if you could be the biggest slug ever your entire career, and you sh study your balls off and become number one, you're getting promoted. So that being said, I will say this. I don't know why I don't. I don't know. I know some people's promotional processes are very thick with education, which is fine. I have a bachelor's degree. I understand the importance of higher education and a collegiate value to it. I don't know if it's applicable on the fire ground. However, I understand what it is, especially in 2025. I can say I learned right away that, not that I was looking to hide, but it's very hard to hide as a company officer. It's very hard to hide. So if you want to do that, like if you want to be a company officer and you want to ascend to that professionally in a professional organization, I'm talking about like receive a paycheck, like that's your job, okay, in a career fire department, and you're not going to hide and you want to be the person that is talked about, have at it. People aren't going to want to work with you. You're going to walk in for a time in a different firehouse. People are going to be like, it's people make it, I say it all the time, work. People make it harder than it really needs to be. When it really needs to be. When I work overtime, I took overtime for what reason? Money, right? I took overtime for money. That's why I answered the phone, and that's why I said yes. I took overtime. So like when I get my gear and go to a different firehouse, listen, I'm there for the extra scratch. However, we're going to handle runs. We can train, but I'm not looking to recreate somebody else's firehouse. Not my company, right? Who's driving? Who's where? Who's this? What's for lunch? What's for dinner? Okay. What do we have on the docket today? I'm not going to try to come in and fix the wheel. It's not my wheel. It's not my wheel. And I think it's if people want to promote people, and I also think in some organizations, fire chiefs look at pinpoint certain people that when they have just the most asinine idea, well, they know this guy will go for it. They know this guy will go for it. Like that, what's that, the blue card bullshit. I mean, you're jamming this blue card thing down people's throats. First off, there's people that are colorblind, so what if they can't see the card? Second off, it's just unbelievable. You're going to give me a cookie cutter program when where you work and I work probably couldn't be more different. Give me a break. Give me a break. So then some fire chief buys into it and he's like, yo, we promoted Ron. He sucks, but dude, he's a yes man. Get Ron up here. Ron, we're doing this. Yes, sir, chief. Yes, sir. No problem. I'll get the guys on it. That's just how it is, man. It's how it is. As much strength is in the fire service, and there are some in guys that are strong people. And I'm not talking physically, I'm talking emotionally, mentally, not outside of the job, obviously. I'm talking about inside the job, okay? Like, but like they have conviction, they have values, like they'll do things, right? They're there for the organization, they're there for the people. As many of them are, for every one of them, there's two that aren't. And they're the ones that become the organizational problem.
So my title at my organization, I'm a senior firefighter, I'm a relief driver. We utilize Blue Card. So I will say this, I'm not a company officer, but with my time there and I don't want to say studying, but looking into what Blue Card is, it's more of a communication thing. Now, the way I look at it, I don't really 100% agree with it because I feel like I've watched other company officers when they have to do their like recert or con ed, whatever you want to call it, like they watch these slides and it's like you're reading a script. You arrive on scene. Engine one arrives on scene of a two-story residential structure. Smoke and flame showing. We'll be stretching in 1 3/4 attack line for primary search and fire control. I, me, think that that's not possible. You know what I mean? Like you can't do both. It's one or the other. So like there are things about it that I'm not real keen on. But unfortunately, if I want to get promoted, I pretty much have to do it. Like I have
And
to take
I
it.
understand that there's a process, and God bless you. Yeah, I think it's asinine. I think putting all that stuff on the radio, especially when the radio needs to be clear for other traffic, the first two apparatus on scene, on location, is giving a report for everybody else. Okay, so two-story middle of the road ordinary fire show on the second floor operating. Boom. I know that if I have a two-story middle of the road ordinary in my city, I am stretching an 1 3/4, no matter what. It's in my work and fire policy. Why do I need to say it? Why do I need to say it? It makes no sense. Like two in, two out. Two in, two out. You mean to tell me the people that are trapped inside the building know they're trapped in there? How many times in America, to anybody listen to this, if anybody does listen, has there been a fire that didn't come in reported people trapped and a primary search yielded somebody trapped? We are running against a clock as soon as 911 is dialed. We're running against a clock. Time is of the essence. Movement is key. Positive movement is key. Going in the right direction is key. Knowing where to go is key. Radio communications, I have the largest stuttering problem. Ask anybody who listens to me on the radio when I'm first due, I sound like a Jake break. I sound like a Jake break. So listen to me. Like it's not for me. I have to process information very quickly and formulate a game plan and go with it. But you got me memorizing a card? Get a It won't last like everything else. Like everything else, it'll fail because it's not tried and true.
And like I said, I don't have I don't want to say the knowledge. I don't go through it because I'm not a company officer, but from what I've seen, I'm kind of like, and the way they explain it to us, it's not tactics, it's a language jargon, if you want to say, like, but I feel like, watching, other company officers go through it, we're reading a script where one thing I also don't like is they always say that they enter through alpha, enter through alpha, enter through alpha. But it's like, to me, if you program through reps and repetition, reps and repetition, you program a certain way, what about if, and we have some company officers that will be able to de facto this, but what happens if you can't go through alpha? Like Bravo, Charlie, Delta, side 1, 2, 3, 4, those are open too. But the way that program works, it's like through alpha, through alpha, through alpha, all the time.
Yeah, I don't mess around with it. I think it's crazy. I think the first hose line should be going through the front door no matter what. It's just it makes a lot of sense unless we have an exposure issue. Obviously, it's situational, but I'm glad that's the best place to go. But you can't cookie cutter something for every town USA. That just shows whoever invented that just shows their complete ignorance for reality and their total not being able to grasp firefighting, street firefighting. That's just my opinion. Love me, hate me, I don't care.
Does your department, do you guys utilize what I call like PDAs, predetermined assignments? First engine's doing this, second doing that, or is it
Absolutely.
strict?
Nope, there's a working fire policy, 7-1-A. First engine is this, second engine is that, third engine is that, first truck, second truck, rescue, chief, second chief, boom. It's spelled out. Policy driven fire departments, riding assignments, things like that, those are the ones that run smoothly. If you Google Kensington, Philadelphia house fire, or YouTube it, you're going to see engine 25. I show the video in every single solitary class that I teach. You're going to see engine 25 arrive solo to a working fire, a two-story end of the row ordinary with fire shown on the first floor and with the product's combustion traveling to the second floor. In 2 minutes and 55 seconds, they position the apparatus, don their SCBA, pull an inch three-quarter, initiate fire attack, grab a water supply, and put the fire out. Why? Working fire policy they train on. It's the best firefighting video there is ever in America.
Okay, can't argue with that. Next topic for you. Realistic training on a small budget. Now, it's my belief that Camden kind of has a level up on other departments, not all, but other a good majority of departments that because you guys see fire duty and like you guys blow, like you sent me that video yesterday of, and I said, oh, must be nice going to, unfortunately. There are a good number of people that don't go to jobs like we
I
would
get
like
it.
to.
I absolutely get it.
So, what kind of realistic training, I guess, do you guys do? But it's kind of if you were for your volley department, what kind of realistic training do you bring in for your members?
So, I don't, unfortunately, don't volunteer anymore. I know the time I own a fire training company where
Okay.
that's all we do is realistic fire training.
Right.
So it's, you kind of just step back and look at something. And so let's take hose lines, for example. I see everybody stretching hose lines in parking lots and doing all these weird ninja moves, or I don't even know how to really explain it. It's very confusing to me because I'm like, wow, has that person ever been inside a hallway with furniture and junk in it and shit in it and shoes and clothes and whatever? Because that doesn't work. It doesn't work. And people argue me because I'm a flow, knockdown, shutdown, and move because I'm navigating through the interior furnishings of a house,
Okay.
boarding conditions, whatever, right? So to recreate the reality of hose line, get some pallets, go to your public works department, guaranteed there's probably 15, 20 pallets sitting down there, get a couple 2x4s, get some screws and a screw gun, build a little maze, then go trash picking. And put furnishings in it. It's that easy. It's very easy to recreate reality. However, the biggest thing people have problem with is zero visibility. And I'm not talking the white Motley Crue theatrical smoke. We're not at a fucking rock concert, all right? The theatrical smoke is nothing like real smoke. Nothing. Not even comparable. I remember going through Fire One in theatrical smoke. Then go into a propane burn building, which there's no smoke. And the first time ever when I'm 18 years old, still in high school, inside a burning building, I nearly freaked the fuck out. Because I didn't, it was my first time there. I was like, whoa, what is this? What is this? It's nothing like darkening. You need to put people in real smoke. It's very, you could, however, you can do it. If you got a Connex box and you burn wet hay, whatever, don't be burning tires and shit like that. It's how you get people killed. But you got to put people in real smoke. You got to put people in zero visibility. Zero visibility is our work environment.
Yes, sure.
So when you get a firefighter day one, put them in zero visibility. If their academy is 9 weeks long, however many days they're there, let's just say they're there for 100 days. For 100 of those days, I hope they were in zero visibility. Because when they graduate the fire academy, guess what they're going to be in their first fire?
Zero visibility.
It's not rocket science. People just try to reinvent the wheel or want likes on the internet.
Okay. All right. Trying to see here the next question I got for you. In your opinion only, when it comes to recruitment and retention, what do you see the fire service doing good on? What do you think that they can improve on?
I would like good for the vo volunteer career. What are we talking?
Either one.
So for the volunteer, I think the biggest struggle faced, I can only speak for my state, is the level of commitment of training to be a volunteer firefighter. It's a lot. So if you like, you're somebody who like wants to get involved in the community, and you're like, wow, like, you know, I'm in decent shape. Firefighting looks like it's a good time. I'm like a 35-year-old guy with a job, and I have kids. Obtaining a firefighter one certificate can be very difficult because of the time commitment, right? So I think the time commitment is something that is something that needs to be, you know, talked about. I do think again, the amount of training and what we're training on, I'm not saying firefighter one could be longer or shorter. I just think it could be streamlined a little bit differently to cover more things and get it done maybe more efficiently. When it comes to career firefighting, I really don't think they explain the job properly to people. I really don't think they explain the job properly. And then they get into the situation where they're at a fire, or you know, they got a mop, they're told to mop a floor. Proby, grab the fucking mop. Let's go. Toilets. And they're like, well, I'm 32 years old. I was a finance broker and just took a career change because I watched Chicago Fire. You know, it's, I don't think people do a good job of understanding job or managing expectations of what a day in the life of a firefighter looks like. And I think it also needs to be said, like, hey, like, I'm not calling it negative, but I'm calling like the realistic effects of the job, like sleep deprivation, time away from family, you know, things like that. You know, we have a high divorce rate for a reason, because we're not home. We're not home. And you know, our other halves sometimes can't grasp that reality. You know, you're built up to be a big bad firefighting machine, and you watch a lot of movies or see Instagram videos, but you don't realize, like, you know, somebody calls out sick, you're held over waiting for them, which happened to me today. And you know, threw my whole day to the right instead of going straight. And that happens often.
And one thing I forgot to ask, on all your apparatus, are you guys riding three or four?
Four.
Four.
Yeah,
Four.
we're lucky. We're very lucky. It's in our contract. I don't know if it'll last forever, but that's what we ride.
And as I'm assuming, is your minimum four as well? Okay. So you guys never go below four. Gotcha. Okay. All right. Eckerd Fire Tactics. How did that whole thing come about? Like, I always ask the guests because to me, there's always something that occurs that triggers that idea or notion. Like, I want to start this, that, or the other. So, how did that come about?
So I was at the time thinking of starting a tree removal company. I used to cut down trees. So, and I at the time I had the one cert, but I had to go back to school and get a couple more, but I had the one that was hard to get, and I didn't even realize I had it. I found out accidentally. So I was going to start a tree company, and I got hurt at work, bad, and I was laid up. So I'm in the hospital, and I finally got access to my phone. And if you've ever been in the hospital nowadays, you get like three channels that suck. You can only watch Maury Povich so many times, man. Like, he is the father, he's not the father. The luster wears off. So you start going on your phone, and this is before TikTok, so this is like 2018-ish. I would just see things, and I'm like, that's weird, or that's not good, or I know I could do that better, or I have all these ideas. And at the time, I did teach at the fire academy. I taught at the local fire academy, and it was just the firefighter one program was beginning. I miss teaching it deeply. I wish I could teach it through my company, but the curriculum was just changing, and it wasn't a place anymore. And I tried to get hired by a few private fire training outfits, and was told no because of my personality, which is fine. So I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna start a tree company. Like, you know, my kids go to Catholic school, I need a side hustle. So, and every fireman has a side hustle. So I got hurt. I started with like an Instagram post, and then somebody from a conference reached out to me and said, like, will you do an engine class? And I'm like, okay. So I put like an engine class together, And it just kind of started from there. And I would go teaching, got on the kind of like the conference circuit thing, which kind of really wasn't for me. I hate telling fire stories. So, like the instructor dinner where everybody's telling fire stories, it's just not my scene. And I get a lot of social anxiety in environments like that. So I always kind of wanted to get the hands on, but if I want to do hands on, I wanted to do live fire. Like I wasn't going to half ass it. I wanted to do it. So like, if you want to start a fire training company, you absolutely could, you LLC it, and you're going to get an insurance policy, but you're not gonna be able to light fires with that insurance policy. So I was like, if I can't get this insurance, I'm not going to do it. It's pointless to me. If I cannot do live fire, I'm not going to do it. So I started shopping insurance, and this is like right before COVID. It's like maybe like 4 months before COVID. Well, a year out before that, I'm shopping insurance, and I finally find an insurance company that through multiple meetings and interviews, they insured me for live fire. And that was like 4 months before COVID, and then I start the training company, put all kinds of money into it, and bam, COVID happens.
Right.
So yeah, that was it. And we've come a long way. I won't say that I love it. I love teaching firemen. I won't say that I love running my business. I won't say that I hate it. There are days that I do hate it. It's a tough. I never thought it would be so cutthroat and so negative and so egotistical and so just, I mean, the amount of people that don't know me that have just tried to slander or come at me is unbelievable. And I'm the type of person, if you come at me, I am coming back at you. Like I'm going for your throat. Like I'm with both hands. That's the type of person I am. Good, bad, or different. That's just who I am. And yeah, it's definitely, we've had some high highs and we've had some low lows. And it's and that's all like on the back end. That's not teaching firemen. Like the training aspect of it has been amazing. We've trained a lot of firefighters and had a lot of good feedback, success. But nobody hates firemen more than other firemen. And nobody, I mean nobody, hates a fire instructor more than other fire instructors. It's unbelievable, dude. Unbelievable. So in the last about 18 months, 2 years, after shaking away some personnel from my company that it needed to happen, I just have kind of put some distance between the traditional conference thing, and I've just been doing my own thing. But we do a lot of private drill nights at firehouses, which are our favorite thing to do. You contract us, we come. We can do like a year plan. We do a lot of that where we come once a month for people and do a lot of that. I do a lot of lecturing still, a lot of writing. My third book, I wrote two books, like my third one's coming out probably. I'm hoping in March. It's just been nothing but delays and delays and delays trying to get this last one out, but I'm working on it. So yeah, man, it's a labor of love that some days I hate.
I get that. And I'll add by saying what you just described, you're not wrong. So I'm the type of person, before I started this podcast thing, like I'm a student. I sit back and I watch things and I just watch how people react. And number one, firefighters, they could be your brothers, and then they could be your own worst enemy. They can be terrible bullies, savages to each other. And I say that to say, I hear a lot of times people like you and other individuals will be like, if you need something, reach out, social media, email. Here's the hell. Some of them will even give you your phone number. And then you reach out and they just fucking blow you off. And like you see that. I thought, you're out here preaching and talking like, hey, contact me for anything. And then when people do, you just blow them off. And I mean, at the end of the day, I don't want to say this because it shouldn't be this way, but for some reason it is. Like, I think when you look at conferences and hot class type things, and then it's like a business. You know what I mean? Like, instead of truly being there to, and I get it, everybody needs to be compensated. That's not what I'm saying. You have a family, it's 2024, shit's expensive as hell. people want to get paid. Nobody wants to do it for free. But like you said, it's cutthroat. People undercut you, undermine you, talk shit just to get.
I agree. So I named Eckerd Fire Tactics after my father. Father's last name's Eckerd. I'm not like, if I would have called it Flame and Frilly's Fire Tactics, people would be like, wow. I spoke last year at a thing with a name, and he's like, you know how many people told me not to come teach you? And I'm like, who? And he's like, this person. I'm like, I don't even know that guy. And I said, he's never even been inside a burning building with me. And what, because of where he works, he thinks he's better than me? Like, I don't have time for any of these people, man. Like, you don't know me. You don't know my children. You don't know my parents. You don't know where I work. You've never been inside a burning building with me. So if you don't know that about me, your opinion about me means nothing. But you want to, because I called it my father's last name, now you want to say something about that? Okay, we'll say something about that. Now you'll never say it to me. You'll say it to the people I work with or work for me. Like, it's just, I don't have time for it, man. So I've really pulled back. I've really pulled back. I mean, I'm available. I'll come to any conference. I'll come anywhere anybody wants me to speak. My guys will come and teach. But I'm not there to drink Miller Lights, which is the worst fucking beer anyway. All right. That's why people love that beer, is beyond my fathoming of mindset. But I'm not there to drink Miller Lights and share fire stories. I'm there to train firefighters and give something back. And I care about that. Like, if you ever see us, whether we're at FDIC or wherever, we're with the people that were in our class. We're hanging out with them and we're talking with them. We're taking the conversations we had training to a social setting and unpacking it. You know, I do say, I tell everybody every time I teach, if you need anything, you reach out to me. I get back to everybody. I get back to everybody. I might not be the fastest at it or the most
Right.
organized at it, but I do. I try to get back to everybody because that's how I learned. And that's how I want to keep it going. I truly, truly care. Sometimes too much, and it's cost me a lot. Trust me, it's cost me a lot of the about how people are as firefighters, and they want to get better. I want to help them. I do, and that's the, if you don't believe that, I don't care, man. I don't care. I don't go Flyers. I don't care.
All right. Only answer this if you can. Has your organization been receptive to you and what you're trying to promote and things? Because like you have a I'm going to say you have a massive following. So I saw you not too long ago. You were in Pittsburgh for the Jimmy Ellis training days.
Yes.
I briefly saw you and your class had a good number of people in there. So like you are doing positive things. Granted, like you said, some people that don't know you might not like, well, I don't like the way he looks or whatever the case may be, but the fact is you are doing something positive for fire service. And is your does your organization kind of like, yeah, he's cool. He we're good with it.
I appreciate the compliment. I don't really talk about it at work.
Okay.
I don't bring it to work. I mean, there's been some, a few people that have been turned off by it, which is fine. You know, I don't talk about it at work at all, unless somebody wants to ask me about it.
Okay.
That's it. It's just it. There, to me, there's got to be a separation. There's got to be a separation. I'm work Bobby. I'm teaching Bobby. Two different people. Well, not I'm the same person, but I'm saying like
Right. I got you.
I don't cross streams.
I got you.
I don't feel that it, I don't feel that it's a thing that needs to be needs to be. I'll help people out at, no matter what. I mean, people know, but we just don't like talk about it. I mean, they break my balls, but it's, some of the jokes are hilarious. I love them. I love getting my balls broken. Love it. So yeah, it's and I appreciate everybody supports what we do. You know, I it's got my name on it, but I have, you know, 20 some people that work for me that put a lot into fire service also. And if you ever, I post all the feedback that we get from our classes, good or bad, it's hardly ever bad. And it's always says like the instructors were the best I've ever had in my life. And that's a reason, man. There's like, I, the guys, everybody works for me is my friend. Like, first off, like I've known them for years. And, you know, second off, like they care just like me. They care just like me, but you know, they don't always wear their heart on their sleeve like me. They're very different, some of them are personality wise.
Right. Okay. And is there probably is, but is there like a vetting process if somebody was like, hey, Bobby, like, I like to teach this. How can I come, you know, onto your cadre to help? Like it,
You're out because you asked.
how really?
It's
So,
like a motorcycle club, dude. We come to you.
okay. So obviously you're watching without them knowing that you're watching them. Understood.
I just wrote a name down last night. I got a list
Understood.
of names. I have a list of names. I'm always watching. I'm always looking how to expand. My wheels are always turning. I carry a notebook with me. I write notes down. I write prop ideas down. I'm always watching. Always.
Gotcha. Okay. And how do you find that balance between, because you travel, I'm sure, all over the country, but how do you find that balance between doing that and making sure your true family, your home life is good? Because you said it, and I know it. I told myself if I ever got into this profession, I would never let a fire department cause a divorce for me. So how do you balance
Terribly. I'm not good at it.
that?
I'm not good. I partly pulled back from traveling so much because of the effect it was having on my children. Right now my kids are my main focus, and I will wholeheartedly admit they always weren't. And that was a blunder that I made. And I'm not making up for it. I'm just being kind of a different version of me. And I try to spend as much time with my kids as possible, turn down overtime, things like that. And yeah, I think it's I can't tell somebody how to find balance because I just found it myself, and I don't even know if I found it the right way or if it's working for me. I'll let or I might have to go back to the drawing board. I can just say that it's if you made them, take care of them. That's the best advice I could tell you. And I'm not the most emotionally available human being. However, I can show my love in other ways to my children. My kids are my number one priority, and not to mention I'm also taking care of my parents that are aging. So my life has drastically changed in the last like 18 months. And good, bad, or indifferent, that's what it is. It's just more like accepting reality and figuring out a plan, and trying to keep this thing going, trying to keep it going. How I w was doing things wasn't working, so I had to come back to the drawing board and kind of replan it.
Okay, understood. And my last question, I always like to ask the guests. You mentioned that you have 6 years left. Where would you like, so 6 years at minimum, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang up the fire service altogether? Like what rank, like what are you're a captain, so like what are your aspirations before you retire?
I'm number two on the battalion chief's list right now. I would love to retire battalion chief. That would be my ultimate goal. However, don't be shocked if I retire and go be a paid fireman in some other small town in Pennsylvania and try to get another pension or do something. I don't know. When I leave the city of Camden, I would love to be a battalion chief. That would be the creme de la creme. If it doesn't work out for me, then captain is just as great. I've always just wanted to be a fireman, man. And everything on top of that has been just gravy, warm gravy on Thanksgiving morning, man. So it's great. I feel like at the battalion chief rank, I could offer a little something more than I offer now, but we'll see. I might fall flat on my face. I don't even know.
So besides that, you have no, would you have any maybe desire to go higher than that to really affect? And I'm not saying you can't affect change. You can affect change in all positions, but like, would you go for the high spot, head honcho anywhere if possible?
I would rather walk into Lincoln Financial Field on a Sunday wearing a Dallas Cowboys jersey.
That says a lot. Okay. All right. With that being said, Bobby, I really appreciate this, man. I know you're busy as hell. I appreciate your not. I like whenever I'm talking to a person that is genuine to themselves, and I get it. It in this society today, not everybody for some reason is going to like you based on if they hear how you talk, how you dress, how you look. I mean, it's a crazy world we live in, but the fact that you stay true to yourself and you know that this is who I am, I'm unapologetically unapologetic, like this is who I am, but you have a love for the fire service that it shows.
I appreciate it. It doesn't, listen, man, I'm not a chameleon. I don't change. I'm the same person anyway. I've been this way since I've been a child. You can ask people, one of the guys that works for me, he's known me since second grade. He can tell you that. This is how I am. The only people I care about who their opinion is my children. I don't, if you don't like me and you don't know me, that tells me everything I need to know about you being a man. Get to know somebody. Oh, I don't like that guy. Well, you know what? I want to get to know him and see, maybe he could be my best friend. So yeah, we'll be back at Jimmy Ellis this year, man.
Okay.
I see us doing some hands-on out there. That was a great time. I'll tell you what, quick story. If being in Pittsburgh area, if a Pittsburgh Penguins fan wore a Pittsburgh Penguins jersey to the Flyers Penguins in Philadelphia, I could not guarantee their safety. I would let them know right up front, like, I cannot guarantee your safety. You know, who knows what could happen? You get a glizzy thrown at you, a beer, a fist. I don't know. Okay. I walked in to both lectures, both days in Pittsburgh, wearing a Philadelphia Flyers jersey, and nobody said a word to me. That's all you need to know about their fan base.
Yeah, Pittsburgh is a different animal. I went to a Steelers game and I felt it was Steelers versus 49ers, and I felt really bad for 49ers fans. Like
I think
they're
football is definitely different. The hockey scene, yeah.
yeah.
Rivalry. But yeah, man, I appreciate it. Anything I can do to help you out, let me know. Hopefully, I see you soon. And yeah, I'll be at FDIC. So,
If anybody wants to reach you, get a hold of you for your company to come in teach. Actually,
you
oh,
can.
I did forget one more question because you brought it up. You mentioned when you first got on Camden, engine, ladder, engine, you have to do your time. What's your favorite, engine or ladder work? Or do you have a
I really don't. There's the one. There's two things I can't do as a fire officer anymore. I can't drive.
okay.
I haven't driven a piece of fire apparatus since 2016. Okay, so I can't drive. I'm not saying it's my favorite position. I'm just saying I can't do it. So there are days when I miss it. And anybody who's ridden in the right front seat, it's not like the driver's ed car. There's not like a steering wheel or a foot brake. Sometimes you're closing your eyes and being like, holy shit, I hope we make this turn and not hit anything. And I can't be on the nozzle. I'm not a nozzleman anymore. I'm an officer. So I do miss the nozzle greatly. I miss making that stretch and, you know, doing that. However, I have always been a goal of mine to be like more of a utility player, be able to do both. And but as a captain, I can't drive and I can't be on the nozzle. As a captain in a truck company, I can throw ground ladders, I can vent, I can do all that stuff. So I do miss being on the nozzle, but I like both. I like both. I was the captain of ladder one before I went back to squad seven. I greatly enjoyed my time there. Greatly.
Okay. All right. And if somebody wants to get a hold of you, how can they do that? And what can you bring? Like, what does Eckerd Fire Techs, what can they bring to departments that are needing training guides?
So obviously the experience. Well, first off, EckerFireTactics.com is our gets you in our system. Instagram Eckert_335. That's where I do most of my damage. I don't know how my mom figures Facebook out. I'm freaking clueless on it, and she's 83. I own more fire equipment than most fire departments. Whether it's air props, I have door props, I have tools, I have custom props. We have a new custom prop that we have, ceiling pulling prop. We put live fire atop it. You know, I have a 35-foot trailer loaded. I got another trailer loaded. I mean, we're ready to go. We're fully mobile. We'll come to you. So it's just firefighting. I do firefighting. I'll do any special operations because I'll tell you what, you know what's not at a technical rescue, a house fire. So I'm not interested in it. So the all's we do is straight house fire. We work on building firefighters' confidence through our experience, and we have a lot of great results with it. So check us out.
Awesome. Awesome. Like I said, Cap, I really appreciate you doing this.
You got it, man.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.